Good morning, Your Honor. Lori Haskell for the appellants. Counsel, may it please the court. This is an appeal.
Rebuttal time?
Pardon me, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes. This is an appeal from a bench trial. So as we know, the standard of review is to determine the findings, determine whether the findings are supported by substantial evidence, and if so, whether the findings support the trial court's conclusions of law. And the appellant's position, Your Honors, is that the trial court worked backwards in this case, starting with an assumption that, and a misguided assumption, that Ms. Brooks voluntarily quit her job and then moved back through time with regard to the events that led up to that, when in fact what the court should have done was started at the beginning when Ms. Brooks announced her pregnancy to her employer and moved forward to the time of her termination, because only then could the court properly apply the standard of the totality of the circumstances. This is a sex discrimination case, and that is based on the Hegwine matter that says pregnancy and childbirth fall under sex discrimination under the Washington law of discrimination. So in a discrimination case, you apply the totality of the circumstances, and at no time did the trial court do that. The trial court parsed individual actions of the defendant and never brought them into a whole. And if we look at the timeline here, Ms. Brooks announces her pregnancy to her employer the last week of February 2009. And in the first week of March 2009, her employer, Walt Bowen, who owns BPM, the defendant, immediately sends out two emails that demonstrate his animus towards women in management positions who are going to have a child. It is clearly his belief that they are not going to have the appropriate commitment any longer to their jobs if they have children. In fact, he says, I would say, and this is the first week in March, I would suggest that given her situation as it now stands and the care that will be needed with her child, that we approach her with the idea of being the marketing and sales leader at Overlake. This is better than the alternative. He admitted in deposition and again in trial that the alternative was termination. A month before Elizabeth delivered, and he also sent out an email the day before saying that Elizabeth will be asked to resign. Then a month before she delivered her child, he sends out an email saying that the company needs to take the necessary step to move Elizabeth out. This was a six-year employee with a stellar employment record. So this is a series of harassing acts by the employer. Then 4 days after Ms. Brooks gives birth, she receives an email from Bowen's right-hand man, Dennis Parfit, stating that they're looking to replace her. Then it goes on. Evidence in the record that witnesses state that she constantly received calls that were distressing to her during her maternity leave, which that is prohibited by statute also, and that then on December 10th, even the trial court found that Parfit meets with her and attempts to get her to resign. And December 21st, she returns to work and that same day is fired. Incredibly, the trial court found that being fired is not an adverse employment action. I cannot think of of an employment action that is more adverse than being fired just because the 10 days later the employer decided to reverse its position and brought her back into the month of January. All of this is clearly retaliation for her having the audacity to become pregnant and have a child. She was the only woman member of the management team. Then in we get to the subject of the schedule, because as we moved into January and now the employer apparently has retracted its termination of her, decides to get rid of her in a different fashion, and that is by changing up her job that she will have to, and knowing that she is nursing and knowing that this baby can only be breastfed, that she is going to have to travel 4 days a week, 3 weeks out of every month. And in fact, if you look at the schedule that is handed to her, she has to change locations every single day. And that is what she could not possibly do with an infant. A lot of these locations that she had to go to required her to fly into an airport and then take a puddle jumper or rent a car and travel a further distance to get the property. If she could have maintained the schedule that she had had for the three previous years, she would have had no problem maintaining that schedule, and she had made arrangements to have a her mother-in-law travel with her as a nanny, and if she could stay in one location for 2, 3, 4 nights, that's fine with an infant. There was unrefuted testimony from her physician that this would be unhealthy for her and unhealthy for the baby. Clearly, the schedule here was pretextual. It was designed to get rid of her. And then again in February, Mr. Bowen sends out another email saying, well, she clearly should have thought more about her career if this is the way she was going to handle it. Then we move into, Your Honors, the fact that there is a medical disability claim. That is because her milk was drying up. That's a separate physical disability. She had a note from her doctor that she was not to travel. She gives it to her employer, and 6 days later, she is terminated, and she is terminated with no interactive exchange between herself and the employer, any contact with the doctor to look into the parameters of her doctor's note. So the employer completely failed its obligations with regard to disability. And finally, Your Honors, I would wrap up with the fact that the trial court misapplied the definition of a speaking agent pursuant to Wright v. Group Health. Thank you. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. April Rothrock for BPM. Ms. Haskell just delivered what is essentially her closing argument that she made to Judge Heller at the trial of this case. Judge Heller issued one of the most thorough decisions that I've seen from a bench trial lately. He documented his conclusions with citations to the evidence and the exhibits on which he relied. He detailed his determinations of the credibility of the witnesses that were before him, and many of the critical findings that he made in this case, including whether there was an adverse employment action, were based on credibility of the witnesses. And it's very clear in his order the evidence that he relied on, most of which Ms. Haskell does not address to this court. She begins her argument by cherry-picking certain facts that support her view of the case, and she invites this court to put on her same rose-colored glasses and look at the evidence the way that she and her client view it. But that is not how Judge Heller viewed the evidence, and it is her burden on appeal to show that he could not have reached the conclusions that he made. And she has not shown that. And I really can't defend his order any better than he already did, where he explicitly states the evidence on which he is relying. And it is not the purpose of this court to second-guess those determinations. Clearly, there were credibility issues that here. I want to point out that there is no assignment of error in any argument about evidence in this case. The plaintiff was able to put on exactly the case that she wanted. All of her evidence was accepted and admitted. She argued the case, and she had the burden of proof, of course. And the ultimate burden is to convince the trier of fact that there was discriminatory motive. And she failed to do that. You know, this is not a summary judgment case. They had some emails from Walt Bowen that were not particularly good for BPM's case. But the ultimate question was whether the travel that she was being required to do was a pretext for discrimination. And she never convinced Judge Heller of that. And that's what this case came down to, really. She got to try her case. It was a fair trial. There's some allegations in her brief that aren't supported by law or fact, that Judge Heller was biased and that she would like a new trial judge and she would like a chance to retry this case. But there's no legal grounds to permit that. This court should affirm Judge Heller's carefully thought-out decision. And, you know, while she argues that it was not looking at the totality of the circumstances, there's no basis for this court to conclude that. It's almost as if she's saying that the judge focused too much on the evidence and was too careful when he went through all the causes of action and claims that she brought, and he permitted her to amend her complaint during trial to add more claims. And he carefully considered them all, and there is no merit to this appeal. I hope Judge Gross is not going to tell me that he has an interest in some of the grounds presented here, but I do invite the court to let me know if there's some part of Judge Heller's decision that troubles you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, we get back to the standard, the applicable standard here, and that is totality of the circumstances. And if you will go through Judge Heller's decision, as I'm sure you have and you will, at no time does he refer to the totality of the circumstances. At no time does he give any credence to the timeline that is involved here and what this case is proposing as it stands now is that a woman who has a child has to choose between feeding that infant and her job. And that is not what the Washington Law Against Discrimination stands for. And I don't believe that that is what our law and our state and this court stands for. And that is precisely what this opinion, as it stands here today before you, that we are asking you to remand, is that a woman has to choose between feeding her child and her job. This schedule was changed up. It was changed up deliberately. And the defendant argued that...
It was changed up deliberately for a purpose other than motivation, a discriminatory motive. A woman does have to change. Does have to make a choice or ask for an accommodation.
And when
what Judge Heller did is to simply say that with zero plus zero equals zero. The totality of the circumstances argument is not sufficient if there is nothing to total, except in particle physics, the sum of the parts equals the whole. And here it's zero.
And we are not asking this court to be a superhuman resources department, Your Honor, but you have to look at the animus that this began with and it's extended through.
Credibility, and it's very difficult for this court to inquire behind that. So that I think that's the difficulty. If there's anything interesting here, it's how you do this in terms of where the animus fits in. But you've used your time. And
May I take a moment to respond to that, Your Honor?
Ask the presiding.
Go ahead.
The defendant claimed that there was a crisis that had to be addressed right at that moment in time in January 2010. That crisis, supposed crisis, had been going on for 3 years. And Ms. Brooks was simply asking for a few more weeks until she could wean her child. And at the time that she was terminated, Mr. Bowen had placed her on restriction and she was not to travel at all. She was proscribed from traveling. So it's very difficult to dovetail that with the sudden crisis that she must travel 3 weeks out of every month. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. And State versus Calibut.